What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Bob Jaswinski. Bob is the co-CEO, partner, and wealth advisor with JFS Wealth Advisors, a firm that has just celebrated its 40th year in existence. We had a great conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie, and then we got into some of Bob's reflections over the last 40 years and how much life has changed and the financial advice business has changed over 40 years. And you're not even going to believe, or maybe you will, just the massive changes in a, 40 years is a long time, but it's not really that long. But the industry itself is so incredibly different. We talked about the importance of giving meaning to your money and how to start thinking about those things and how to have good open conversations and just get started in that planning process. And then we finally talked a little bit about the role that faith plays in all of it. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Bob, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please, sir.
Sure. I'm a five handicap golfer. I love spy movies, mysteries, and thrillers, and I was an elected public official.
Okay. Five handicap. Good for you. You like spy movies, and you were an elected public official. You seem like a heck of a nice guy, Bob, so I don't know why you would be an elected public official. Just kidding. Maybe you were. Spy movies. I'm going to guess that you don't like spy movies.
I am not a five handicap golfer.
Do you even play golf?
I enjoy the game, but I do not have the time to ever get the handicap down to five. So I enjoy spending time with my wife and friends on the course. And as long as I'm hitting more good balls than bad, I'm a happy golfer.
You don't want to ruin a nice walk after all. So I get it. So yeah. You were an elected public official. What office did you hold?
Yeah, I served as an elected city commissioner in the early 90s. And it actually was a great experience. You know, I grew up in a relatively small community and have always had an urge and a desire to, be involved and, help make things better. And I don't know if you remember in the 80s, but our region of Western Pennsylvania was decimated when the steel industry collapsed and, the economy began a transformation away from heavy manufacturing. So we had a lot of issues that, we were dealing with at that time. So made some lifelong friends. I'm still actively involved, no longer as a commissioner, but certainly helping behind the scenes. So it was a good way for me to get further involved in the community and, learn some things that, have stayed with me over time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Appreciate that we need good people to take on responsibility like that. So I'm grateful. All right. Well, great job. So you just celebrated 40 years in the financial advice business. Congratulations. What is top of mind for you right now?
Thank you. Well, when you get to that point, at least for me, reflection's been a big part of my, more recent activities. We had a big celebration 2 weeks ago at a resort in the Pennsylvania Poconos for all of our teammates. And it was just a wonderful experience for all of involved. It's kind of great to think back on, what's been, what got us here. But, there was a book written a number of years ago that what got you here won't get you there, so it's sort of a good thing to be thinking about, what comes next at this point too. When I started the firm 40 years ago, a lot of the things that we take for granted today were in their very early stages. Just as an example, mutual funds were kind of scorned by investors, as a, lesser choice, but, yet the advantages were pretty compelling to those who took the time to understand it. Vanguard was in the early stages of its existence. I think John Bogle founded Vanguard in the early 70s and, you know, really paved the path towards, you know, low cost, effective investing. I think the first edition of stocks, bonds, bills, and inflation that Roger Ibbotson and Rex Singfield published, you know, came out in the 70s and really, you know, informed a lot of my thinking on the long-term advantages of the financial markets, you know, particularly investing in stocks. Charles Schwab was in its first decade. You know, Chuck Schwab, you know, kind of morphed to being the low-cost investing solution for do-it-yourself investors and really created the technology platform that allowed independent registered investment advisors like us to, you know, to really succeed over time. And I was early in the CFP movement, too. You know, the financial planning was just coming of its own in the 80s. And I'm a CPA by training. So the firm that I started in 1986 was a CPA firm specializing in financial planning. And we did real financial planning, you know, including tax planning and, you know, things that, you know, advisors call holistic or comprehensive planning today. And we added investment management a year later when we joined Schwab's financial advisor network. And then the other thing that was evolving that I paid, you know, close attention to back at the time and we continue to use in our firm today, you know, is the acclaimed Fama French research into, you know, the dimensions of stock returns and how structural tilts in a portfolio, which Dimensional Fund Advisors is based on, you know, can add premiums to, you know, returns over market-wide returns. And, you know, that, so we used all that stuff, you know, in our practice and our advice to clients. And I think it's served our clients very well. Now, you know, the question is what comes next? You know, I think we have an evolution of all those things, which is great. Just as personal computers were changing the industry in the 80s, you know, I think we have artificial intelligence doing that today and for the future. We're using artificial intelligence about a half dozen different ways in our business today, certainly in improving our productivity and enhancing our ability to service clients. But, you know, we're not thinking about cutting any jobs. You know, we're just thinking about how to use it to, you know, make ourselves better. And, you know, I think it's probably almost pervasive today, you know, for all of us. But I think that deepens over time and, you know, really fundamentally changes, you know, a lot of the way we do things. But I could see it being, you know, really for the better, you know, with better results down the road. So, you know, I have stepped out of firm leadership. We have a 5-person leadership team. I'm still on that, but much more passive. The other 4 people, you know, younger than me and have a much longer runway now are doing a phenomenal job. So, you know, I have no intention to retire in the conventional sense. You know, I really want to stay active. I want to add value. I don't want to get in anyone's way, but I want to continue to coach and mentor and be there for clients when they need me and, you know, continue to add value. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that, you know, at least in the near term. So I think, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of wealth created over the last 40 years when you, you know, look at the financial markets and from our point of view, you know, our clients' investment portfolios, because we have many clients who started with us in the early years and, you know, we're still managing money for or managing money for their children and grandchildren. And it's, you know, really kind of gratifying to spend all that time with clients and see them realize their financial objectives and in many cases even surpass them, you know, to be able to live the quality of lives that they want and, you know, do what they want to do. So, you know, money needs to have meaning, I think. And I think that's what we're able to add, you know, through the financial, you know, through the financial planning process.
A lot of good stuff. It is wild to look in the rear view, say 40 years ago, my goodness, not only did we not have the internet, we barely even had mutual funds and all the financial vehicles and things that exist today. It's just totally different.
You know, I remember looking at investment portfolios back then, George, for people who were interested in becoming clients and, analyzing the commissions that they paid. I remember plenty of situations where, these folks were paying 2 to 3% per year, in commission costs before commissions were totally deregulated. And now, if you pay a commission, it's basis points, single digit basis points, cost over the year. And and a 2 to 3% drag just from commissions made it very difficult, if not impossible, I think impossible, to realize the returns that the financial markets generated. So, the things that John Bogle and Chuck Schwab and David Booth and Ken French and Gene Fama have done to revolutionize investing over time, have dramatically impacted the investors for the better.
Yeah, no question about that. I've been thinking a good amount about contribution lately, as well. And you're a person that has been focused on that, it sounds like, throughout your entire life and certainly your career. You've held public office, you've stewarded countless clients from the early stages to now helping them reach retirement or whatever their objectives are. And you want to look for ways to continue to contribute without being in the way, just to use some of the words that you used. And I think that that's such a it's important to be thoughtful about that, because as we transition into different stages of our lives, we all want to stay relevant and we all want to make a contribution, but it's not always easy.
That's an interesting thing. When I started the firm in 1986, I got involved with a lot of local businessmen who grew up in the area like I did, and we all wanted to do something to positively impact the region from the circumstances that that existed at the time. And it was really a wonderful way to give back and collaborate, with others of like minds. And when you do something like that, you have to do it for the reasons that you're involved with, not to just meet people to try to sell services or products to. That just doesn't work. So getting truly involved in causes, that make sense, has been a big part, of my past, and something that I continue to do. I'm active with four nonprofit organizations now, and I really like helping people make things work and creating the organizational structure and infrastructure to to stand the test of time. And I'm actually looking forward to being able to spend a little more time on that. And then professionally, it's the coaching and mentoring that really stimulates me today, and it's the education, that I think my experience, can help inform that, that I'm really, really excited about. We help all of our clients with their philanthropic and charitable objectives, and it's a, really gratifying to me to see so many of our clients who participate with community foundations or other charities or have donor advised funds and, are really actively, contributing to, to really good causes. And, been really impressed with, the people of immense wealth in our country who have signed the Giving Pledge and are willing to give a large part of their fortunes away to good charitable causes. I think about that a lot. It's the wealth gap. I've read enough to know that the middle class and even the upper middle class throughout the world, they're expanding in numbers. So, people are moving from, from sort of that bottom class, up into the middle class, and up into the upper middle class. But really what's been phenomenal, and I think it's a mathematical certainty that it continues, is, you know, when you think about very wealthy people who only spend a fraction of their earnings in net worth, and then you compare that to the bottom 50 to 60% of households from an income point of view who are really living paycheck to paycheck for the most part, you know, that wealth gap, you know, just continues to increase. So, you know, how do you manage that over time? I'm not sure that it's wise to put a lid on how much wealth people can accumulate through, you know, good entrepreneurial efforts. But I do think we need to be concerned about how to bring everyone else along and help them grow wealth. And, you know, that's why I'm, you know, was impressed by your book. I think you're attempting to address that, you know, and you know, make an awareness that it's really behavior change. And a number of years ago, I participated in an effort in Pennsylvania. The state treasurer convened a task force to study the concept of putting a mandatory IRA plan together for the approximately 50% of employees in Pennsylvania who aren't covered by a retirement plan. And I think it's a really, really important thing to do. Politics haven't allowed that to happen in Pennsylvania. There is some federal legislation, you know, that might help that. But I think the more that we can reinforce the need for everyone to get involved in a long-term investment program and really educate them on how to allow that wealth to build over time and compound earnings and live within their means and spend less than they're making, there'd be a huge benefit to that, you know, long-term. We have issues with Social Security, trust fund solvency, and what might happen to future benefits. And, you know, that could be, you know, one piece of, you know, many pieces that, you know, that allow us to solve that issue over a longer period of time. So I think a lot about that, you know, how, you know, we can really improve our financial literacy efforts to, you know, give those folks the right advice and the right tools so that when they do invest, they can avoid the, you know, the hefty fees and commissions and, you know, invest in, you know, in a really appropriate and prudent long-term manner. You know, as part of that effort, I became aware of a professor at the Wharton School by the name of Keith Weigelt, who started Bridges to Wealth. And it's a great program that, you know, they've rolled out in the Philadelphia area and other areas of the country through sponsors and so forth to educate people in poverty on the power, you know, of investing even small sums regularly in, you know, low-cost Vanguard mutual funds, and there are other alternatives today, you know, that are very low-cost investment options that, you know, that can be, you know, just as effective. So I'm hoping that, you know, not only, you know, I and my firm can get more involved in that as a public service, then we're not going to generate clients from that. So it would be, you know, as a public and community service, but also the profession and, you know, other industries to really begin to understand the importance of that and create a better environment and framework, you know, for people to save long-term.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And it's a major concern of mine too, that we have a lot of people who are feeling more disenfranchised and disconnected from the promise of the country and capitalism and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you start pointing fingers at the wealthiest and most successful among us. And I think that that's a flaw. It's flawed thinking as well.
Yep.
So money and meaning, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the end objective of, you know, really good financial planning is, you know, how do you give meaning to your money? And, you know, how do you structure, you know, your balance sheet and, and what you're directing your resources to achieve your, your financial objectives over time. I just the process of clarifying what financial objectives, folks have is important. You have to know, where you're going, or where you want to go, I guess, before you can, possibly get there. So, I think it's the value that, that financial planning brings. And, I think those needs or objectives or whatever you might say increase over time too, from, what might be very basic, early in your career and life to, being much more substantial as you age and accumulate wealth and have heirs who are depending on you and perhaps charitable causes that you want to benefit. So, kind of living the life stages with clients is has been particularly rewarding for me too, and helping them not only define but but realize their objectives and direct money to the causes, whatever they might be.
Do you have certain questions that you find yourself always asking? Favorite questions?
Yeah, well, it's going to vary, based on, client by client. But, as we kind of get into the process and, getting to know clients better and understand their needs, those questions come up continuously based on what their needs, circumstances, and objectives are. So, probably the most open-ended question is as well, what do you want to accomplish over time? Do you have a thought on when you want to be financially independent? Do you have any thoughts on the magnitude of wealth that you might need, to achieve that? Those are things, obviously, that, we can put numbers to, but, it's still going to be dependent on, what those folks want to accomplish. We find that almost all of our clients are, very concerned about family, first and foremost, and that's probably right. And then, beyond that, as they accumulate what they might consider to be surplus wealth, it gets into, to other things. So we have a broad range of clients from, those who are just starting out to the very wealthy. We have a segment of our service that, is directed to the very wealthy families who have, more family office type needs, and where, you're dealing then with really multiple generations and business interests and real estate interests and charitable planning and heirs that might not be showing the right behaviors and and things like that. So, so as we carefully listen to our clients, explain what they want to accomplish and probe, for deeper meaning, we're constantly going off in directions that we might not expect, when we set out, when we've set out.
Get the conversation started, open-ended questions, figure out what all this money is for. I like it. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on 40 years.
Thank you,
Tell
George.
us how people can connect with you and learn more.
Yep. I'd say building sufficient financial strength, based on your needs, circumstances, and objectives is an important component, maybe a crucial one, to a satisfying and happy life. But it's only one component. Good health, which might trump all, strong personal relationships, and keeping purpose and meaning in your life are also very crucial components. Arthur Brooks, a professor at the Harvard Business School who teaches and writes on happiness, adds faith to that basic list. That doesn't work for everyone, but it's, worked for me, whether it's a belief in God or human ingenuity or balance in the universe or whatever it might be, you know, having faith that humanity will continue to progress and, you know, will continue to improve lives for all of humanity, I think is, you know, is an important thing to believe over time.
There's a lot that goes into a rich and wealthy life, more so than just money. So thank you.
Yes.
Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Bob your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. What's the website, Bob?
It's www.jfswa.com. And that would be James Frank Sam W. A.com.
Excellent. 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 So go to JFSWA.com and learn more about the firm that Bob has built and get involved, however it makes sense. Thanks again, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, George, and good luck to you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Take care.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.